Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Yeah. You guys want to start the show?
Let's start the show.
Sugar. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Morning Cereal, the show that celebrates the themes of Saturday morning cartoons, which not only did we grow up with, let's take a look at pop culture. Turns out they grew up with us.
Mm-hmm.
These velvet dulcety tones in your ears right now. Oh, it's me, Dan Grimshay, and I'm your host. These screeching, almost non-human tones you're about to hear, first of all, are Marquee. Are you there, Marquee? You always are for me. Please be there.
I'm barely hanging on, man, but I'm here.
Oh, that feels great. You know what? A little support in the form of Jimmy the Gent would help me out, too, right now.
It's me, Jimmy!
All right, Jimmy the Gent Lazinski, Marquee, and of course the aforementioned myself, the host, Dan Grimshay. And we're talking today about something I really don't know a lot about. And so I'm going to need to be filled in. That's right. I don't know if we've got theme music ready, but this is another Explain It to Dan Shay episode. First, right off the bat, we're doing Death in the Family, new DVD, Blu-ray, Choose Your Own Adventure.
From the DC
Animated on Blu-ray,
Batman.
Available on digital.
Yes, it's the new thing from DC Animated, which is a very popular franchise right now.
Oh, man, you guys probably should have been in charge of announcing that. Because, again, I, Dan, am absolutely ignorant of one of the crucial parts here. Apparently... And you guys, I know, were planning this episode after doing this new style. I've been looking at your expense reports. It looks like you went all the way to New York for the big New York Comic Con this week.
Yeah, yes.
And you've come back with this strangely Zoom-sounding roundtable discussion.
Yeah, this is the world that we live in, and we all should just shut up and put up with it.
Yeah, these are the names we give it.
Mm-hmm. This is it. So, yeah, we ended up getting invited to the press room roundtable for the Batman Death in the Family DC animated release. And lo and behold, this is a first where this is a kind of a choose-your-own-adventure, decide-the-fate-of-Robin kind of thing. And there's some cultural touchstones involved with making this particular title in that particular way.
So you mean like, that Black Mirror Bandersnatch episode on Netflix?
What'd you call me?
I think you heard me, Bander. But the whole choose your own adventure TV movie narrative thing. This is what they're doing. This is the first time they've done it.
Right. But I think it's funny that it's...
Now, why would they do it with this? I mean, apparently Robin's fate or somebody's in the wind? I'm still unclear.
Yes.
Why would they do that?
Well, it is a death in the family, and that family member is Robin. Spoiler alert.
Let me interject here, fellas.
Resident Batman episode finally stepping in to say something. Jimmy, please, what?
Well, yeah. So way back in 1988, I think you young lads were still in high school or some such nonsense.
High school?
Maybe even junior high. But anyway.
I was high school class enough. Of 95, just to put you in.
There's a lot of history that leads us up to the moment of this movie, that what happens. So I don't know where we should start.
Well, give it to me, because I am unaware. I know the basic Batman canon.
I'm gonna hit it with a big brush and some broad strokes, but hopefully you'll learn a little something.
Mm-hmm.
So around 1983, this is well before the turn of the century, Robin had decided he wanted to go on and be his own superhero by the name of Nightwing.
Well, he grew up.
Right. Yeah,
he's not the boy wonder anymore.
Again, broad strokes. And so they need a new Robin. And at the time, their decision was to pretty much just fill in a cookie cutter version of Dick Grayson to replace him by the name of Jason Todd. And his parents were killed in an acrobatic accident at the circus.
All right, hold on. I'm sorry. Here's where my ignorance needs to shine through. What the fuck is this Dick Grayson, Jason Todd? What are you talking about? I thought we were talking about Robin here. Maybe we need to go a little further back.
That's fair. You're right.
Now,
let me.
Do you think the average man on the street knows that there are a bunch of various Robins with these weird, very white names?
That's hard for me to say, because especially...
Oh, it's easy for me. I'm a fan on the street. No.
I'm not the average man on the street.
You just caught me. And,
so, Dick Grayson was the first Robin.
In like the 40s, the 60s?
In 1939, and Batman
who
number
was Burt
one.
Ward?
Also was Robin on TV's Batman, 1936.
So he was Dick Grayson.
Show. Yes.
All right.
He was the first Robin. Then Robin grew up, wanted to be his own superhero, and claimed the moniker Nightwing. Now, in the vacuum that was left in the sidekick position, we come across a new character by the name of Jason Todd, who eventually gets to be Robin and fights alongside Batman.
So there was a little period there Batman was Robinless.
Short time, very short time. And this is the early 80s. 1983 is when Jason Todd first appeared on the scene and became Robin. And slightly different to Dick Grayson, who was his ward, he adopted Jason Todd.
So he was his father.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm with you.
All right.
Okay.
So instead of guardian, he was father. So he loved Jason Todd more. This is very clear. All right.
Well, maybe. Maybe not. But these are things that do come up.
Ooh, ambiguity. That's great in an answer for someone
sure.
who knows
well,
nothing about
I mean,
it.
This
thanks,
thus
buddy.
Thus creates the friction and the drama of the Batman family. Like, Dick is always wondering, did he love me more? And but that's not kind of fluent to what we're talking about. But so Jason Todd is, for about 5 years, he's Robin, and the writers write him as, quite frankly, again, to keep it short, a dick, and wasn't a big fan. He wasn't. The fans weren't a big fan of him.
He was kind of violent, right? He was kind of a little aggressive.
He was more violent. Yeah, he had a chip on his shoulder. And the fans just didn't like him. Obviously, it's a fictional character, and that's just the way they're writing him, but they received a lot of letters.
But they force-fed
this like
Jason Todd and, Robin.
Right, and there's also probably a little bit, and I can speak to this, for me, was like, hey, this isn't my Robin. Who's this fucking punk kid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were actively reading, so you were on the side
I lived through this.
Mm-hmm. Were there campaigns to, I don't know, bring Dick Grayson back, or...?
Well, in 1988... is when they came up with this campaign, right?
Oh, there is. Okay.
Well, DC wanted to clip somebody. They were going to try this experiment. They were going to get rid of somebody to have somebody call in and decide the fate of a character. And they couldn't be a throwaway character. It had to be somebody
big. Boy,
that
really sounds like a DC supervillain premise.
Yeah.
Like, I can picture a lot of Batman's nemeses. Saying, call this 900 number and decide which one of your cohorts lives and dies.
Well, that's essentially what they did. That was the experiment. Could they affect the comic books? We're going to let the readers decide. So they set up a 900 number. to decide the fate of Dick Grayson.
Yeah, I actually found the original in-comic flyer, and it says, Robin will die because the Joker wants revenge, but you can prevent it with a telephone call. The number is 1-800-720-2660. The Joker fails and Robin lives, or 1-900-720-2666. The Joker succeeds and Robin will not survive.
Hold on, did you say one of them was the was an 800 number?
No.
And the other was a 900 number?
They're both 1-900 numbers. It's 50 cents a call.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter which way you vote.
And that was big money back in 88.
Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Kids would definitely need permission to call a 900 number.
And it actually says that these numbers will work only in the USA and Canada between the following hours, September 15th and September 16th. So this was a 2-day campaign from
Right. They promoted it for months before. Mm-hmm. And then the story came out, and essentially what happens is it's a 4-story arc, but the end of it is the Joker, and you've seen this referenced at this point many times over in Batman lore. Joker beats the crap out of Robin, beats him to death with a crowbar.
With a crowbar.
Actually, know what? I was kind of aware that some Robin met his fate that way, strictly because of a lot of Batman video games.
Yeah.
That I've played. And I feel like aside from any movies, that's the only place I've gotten like sanctioned DC Batman info. Mm-hmm.
Let's call it canon.
It does seem like they've all taken for granted that I know all these backstories.
Well, it's pretty old at this point, 30 years old, 32 years old at this point.
I came here for explanations, not a shaming.
I'll do the gatekeeping if you don't mind.
Well, since this is the 80th anniversary of Robin, this is the year of our Lord, 80 years.
Right. This is the 80th anniversary of Dick Grayson and the character Robin.
Yes. Again, it's very. I always thought there was a Robin.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
there's been multiple Robins.
I mean,
yeah, two of them. He changes them
like oil filters.
Yeah. So there's Dick Grayson. There's Jason Todd, who we're going to be talking about a lot.
Right. And that's all the Robins.
There's Tim Drake.
What?
There's Tim Drake. There's Stephanie Brown, and there's Damian Wayne. There's also, if you were to remember, in the Christopher Nolan movie, The Dark Knight Rises.
He's got a Gordon Levitt in the mix, too.
Yeah, and his name is like this amalgamation. His name is John Blake. So
John Blake was a character from the comic books that they used, a very obscure one-off character.
Oh, I see. But
that they used,
but and then they
that Batman helped as a kid.
And, the,
ooh,
and
we're
they
all
gave
learning.
Him the middle name of Robin. So he was John Robin Blake. So he's kind of in the middle, being Nightwing, being Batman.
JRB.
Yeah.
You skipped over, Mark, if you don't mind, Carrie Kelly from The Dark Knight.
I was
Returns.
About to get to that because that happens to be my favorite Robin that's not Dick Grayson. Is Carrie Kelly. And Carrie Kelly was like she was like a 12-year-old girl.
She don't shiv.
I did read that you're talking about the Frank Miller.
Yes.
Yeah, I did forget about that. And I feel like she was a self-styled Robin, so I didn't really clock her as being official.
Yeah, she actually...
If I'm remembering right.
Yeah, she's like just this little punky girl who's like acrobatic and she's brave. And she just wants to help Batman, who just came out of retirement, basically.
Like Miles Morales, she goes to the costume store and buys a Robin costume.
Yeah.
And forces her way into helping Batman.
And she
but I have to imagine, if I was growing up in Gotham from the age of 7 to 13, I would have been wearing a Robin costume all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
sidebar.
You never
maybe
know.
That's part of Batman's plan is to have even more decoys. Stay on topic. That's a thread I want to pull on later. But
yeah, I don't want this to go off course too much. But yeah. There has been
you
a
can
lot
kill
of Robins.
One Robin, but there might have been hundreds in Robin costumes over the years.
Yes, there's been a lot of Robins and. I think everybody has their favorite. I think most of them.
You know, Mark, if I may, we did a pretty deep dive over on our sister podcast, the Powcast, where we talked a lot about Robin and the 80-year anniversary and spoke to Burt Ward, TV's Dick Grayson.
Uh-huh. Well, I love
but
that.
But today we're talking about Jason Todd.
Powcast.
If you want to know more about Dick Grayson, check out that. Check
a
out our show.
Good point. That is a nice in-depth dive. And that host, the very charismatic host over there, has developed quite a relationship with Burt Ward.
And he's handsome, too.
One would say he is the ward of Burt Ward.
Oh, dare to dream.
So
that's a Jimmy Grayson.
Worth it, true.
So now back to Jason Todd.
Nice.
Nice segue.
Okay, go back.
Holy segue, Batman. We dropped the momentum.
Jason Todd, let's go.
Yeah, listen, fill me in. Jason Todd, he sounds like he was a troubled orphan, mm-hmm. got adopted, but never quite got over that angry streak.
And then so
how does Batman deal with this?
Well, and then there was this big campaign.
So that's where we left off. Yeah.
Right,
the stage is set. Yeah. Fans aren't a big fan of his. DC needs a big hit, a big gimmick, because they're soon to be competing with the Batman movie that's coming out. And as always, you know, comic books need their big tentpole event or whatever it is, something to sell some more books. So they're willing to experiment with somebody who's going to decide the fate. They chose this big guy, big name, big tier character, Robin, Jason Todd. No. And set it up so you could call one of the 900 numbers and decide his fate, yes or no. Yes, he lives. Yes, he dies. So
I imagine him getting some feedback about how he was not a fan favorite. So it just sweetens the pot.
That's why they thought he would be a good...
If you really want us to kill him, prove it.
That's why the editor, Denny O'Neill, at the time chose him, because if you put Batman up there, there's no real consequence. Of course, they're not going to kill Batman, but if you put up Jason Todd, who has all this friction with the fans and characters,
30
and the story.
Years late, but
so,
big props to Denny. Good call.
Long story longer. Joker beats the crap out of him with a crowbar. Batman busts in and carries him out. And then there's a month in between comic books. And then, as Mark said, there's 2 days that you can call in these 900 numbers. And it was decided by less than, I think it was 74 votes.
72.
That it was decided that
out of how many total votes, though?
10,000.
Oh.
No, yeah. 10,000.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just over 10,000. Yep.
Total votes.
Yeah, there was 10,000 total votes, but the difference was 72 votes.
Right. And an interesting sidebar
and
is it might have been
Sprint managed to make $5,000 off of this.
Yeah.
At least. And there was allegedly this computer program, a guy out in California programmed his computer to dial the number every couple minutes. And he claims that it was, and he was having it dial and vote no. So he claims that it was him that actually killed Robin, because the number of times that he called was more than the difference of votes. He called over 100 times.
Was his name the Joker?
Oh,
because that really feels like that could be the movie.
Information in
he actually killed Robin. And came out and tried to take credit for it.
So that's
using a piece of evil technology. Does anyone else want to keep throwing it? Because there's lots of, I think, similarities here.
I like where you're going with this, only it's not going anywhere. So go ahead.
Oh, but hey, listen, tweeters out there, tweet at Stay Classy SDCC. Let me know the real story behind this. I'm sure some of you listening know it. I, Dan Grimshay, need to learn. I'm ignorant. So anyway, moving on. I feel like now you've given me at least the history of a couple of Robins,
you know,
up to Jason Todd.
Can I tell something?
How do they tell this story?
Can I add just one little thing?
I'd love it.
In 1989, when all this was going on, I think it was 1989. 88. All of the, you know, on the cover of Newsweek, on Time Magazine, on, you know, 60 Minutes or whatever was the median, it wasn't Jason Todd is dead. It was Robin is dead. You know, so to most people that are just out there, this was really that Robin had been killed. And even, you know, even though I was of age to be reading comics and I was a part of, you know, I was a part of this kind of generation that kind of lived through this, to me, I remember Robin dying.
And were you aware at the time that it was Jason Todd and not Dick Grayson?
I don't remember that. I actually still have my, you know, my original graphic novel, which was the collection of all of the comic books that led up to this. It was like a 4 or 5 comic book arc. But I still have my original one from 1989 or whatever. And I just remember Robin was dead, you know, and it didn't really occur. It wasn't as impactful to me when I was that age that it was Jason Todd or it was Dick Grayson. It didn't really matter. It was that Robin had died. So this was a big cultural thing to what I'm.
Well, let me ask you, if young Marquis was allowed to call one of those numbers, which way would you have voted at that age?
I would have voted no, you know.
All right, because you want to save Robin.
Right, I want to save Robin. You know?
Jimmy, I'm going to ask you, although I feel like you would have said it if you did you vote?
I did.
Oh, which way did you
vote?
No, don't kill him, or no, kill this mother.
I voted thumbs down, yeah.
All right, because I think he was more aware that it was Jason Todd.
I didn't enjoy him as a character, and...
Yeah, but to kill him, you...
You know, will this experiment work? Let's mix it up a little bit. Let's mix up the normal, you know, the status quo, right? And see, let's see if they'll follow. Let's see what could happen. Let's see if DC will follow through and really kill off one of their biggest properties, franchises, IPs, characters. Big help, stop me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it also feels like you were much more like into the psychology of this property at that point than like me and Marquis would have been, just a few years behind you, but developmentally still children. Mm-hmm. And we want to root for Robin.
Right.
You wanted to kill Jason Todd. How complex an idea that is. And now you're telling me they finally revisited it with some sort of digital video disc and digital download style. What? Bring me back,
Dan,
again. What is this Death of the Family about?
Grimshay, we're not there yet.
Oh,
we
got to
talk about it. Yeah, so originally they did a story all about that called Under the Red Hood. Eventually... Jason Todd comes back to life and assumes the moniker of the Joker's first alias, the Red Hood. And it's a year-long storyline where nobody knows who the Red Hood is. And it's finally revealed to be Jason Todd, who is a more violent version of Batman, who is cleaning up Gotham by killing the gangster heads and taking over all the gangs and controlling it rather than trying to stop it.
Uh-huh. So there was some sort of fine print.
Spoiler alert, it's Jason Todd, returned from the dead. Let's not get into how he's returned from the dead.
Yes.
But
it sounds more like they asked, do you guys want to see a snuff film?
That's what leads us into the first movie, Under the Red Hood, that explores that whole storyline of him, of young Jason Todd as Robin when he's doing good, as an older Jason Todd, as an older Robin where he's kind of a dick and nobody really likes him, as a dead Jason Todd, as the Red Hood Jason Todd. And this is all the movie. One of my favorite DC animated movies is Under the Red Hood, written by former Real World star Judd Winick. He had written the whole story arc of Jason Todd coming back to life and taking over and becoming the Red Hood. That was his whole.
Before or after he was on MTV's The Real World?
After. But that was that was his brain baby to bring back Jason Todd, make him Red Hood, and have him be a foil. And how would that affect Batman? How would the loss of your one good soldier, to quote The Dark Knight?
Oh, I love that line. It's one of my favorite lines.
Right?
Yeah.
So how is the loss of that and then having him come back, how does that affect the world's greatest
detective? See,
asking
those kinds of psychological questions, that is further evidence that this theme is just growing up with us.
Well, and...
even before me.
Well, and, you know, I did, you know, again, I had the graphic novel of A Death in the Family. I was very emotionally involved in the death of Robin. Fast forward 20 years later, and I'm watching Batman Under the Red Hood, and it's one of their best animated movies by far. It's maybe top 5 at least, maybe even top 3. It's a fantastic movie. Go watch Under the Red Hood.
Under the Red Hood,
yeah, it's fantastic.
Is my favorite DC animated movie, and it's easily maybe one of my top 10 movies of all time.
Yeah.
I just love the story.
It is really
presented. It's very emotional when Jason faces Batman and he wants to know, why couldn't you kill the Joker after what he did to me? Like, it's very, I'm getting goose nipply all talk just thinking about it right now. So we'll pause, I mean, put a pin in that.
Yeah,
maybe
and,
have a whole show about Under the Red Hood. But
and,
we have to
doing a remake of that straight across, scene for scene, shot for shot, Gus Van Sant. Now let's listen to that interview.
Hold on.
See, because, okay, so this is...
Ease up on the atomic battery, buddy.
What else, Jimmy? What else is happening
this
here?
This is where it gets kind of crazy, because, like, well, just to kind of finish my thought from previous, is that this thing is, you know, I was aware of this story, I was emotionally involved in the story, but I did not know the story of the Red Hood. So I'm watching Batman Under the Red Hood, and I'm just blown away because it's connecting to a comic that I read 20 years earlier. I loved it. I had no idea that Jason Todd was a part of this. Now, they ended up casting Bruce Greenwood as the voice of Batman in Batman Under the Red Hood. They also put in Neil Patrick Harris. This is before he kind of made his comeback with How I Met Your Mother. Jason Eccles played the voice of the Red Hood. But the guy that played Jason Todd was Vincent Martella. And so Bruce Greenwood played Batman. Vincent Martella played Jason Todd. And both of those guys... Oh, and John DiMaggio played the Joker. All three of those guys came back to do Batman: A Death in the Family, you know, some 10 years later.
So it's also worth noting, I'd like to mention, that John DiMaggio's Joker is his take on the Joker is one of my favorite, next to Cesar Romero's, is my favorite, because everybody is kind of either doing him or doing Jack Nicholson, and this John DiMaggio's take in Under the Red Hood, which everybody could pause right now and go watch, is my favorite take on the Joker.
I think he does a lot of Mark Hamill Joker. I think he curbs a lot of it.
He distills Mark Hamill's performance into, like, everybody is wants to lean into a Riddler-ish over the top laughing and can't control it. And he's just really, the whole performance is really cool.
I agree.
Really subdued. At the end, there's a couple of little laughs to let you know that it's bubbling underneath.
Oh, you know? Well, I can't wait to hear from him in the interview.
Yeah, let's do it.
Speaking of that interview, who else is on there? So we're talking. I understand John DiMaggio had something come up, but we talked to Bruce Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to Vincent Marshmallow Hands.
But Dan, we haven't gotten there yet. That's not even what we're talking about.
Oh, you're kidding me.
We're talking about the newest offering from the DC animated universe is it's called Death in the Family, and it's a continuation of this Under the Red Hood. So you can decide, much like you could back in the 80s, if Robin lives. It's an interactive video. You can decide if Robin lives, if Batman saves him, if Robin dies. You can choose all these different pathways and end up with, I think it was, Mark, how many endings do you remember?
I've only seen myself
upwards of 10.
Yeah,
of 10 endings,
I think there's 7 to 10 because, you know, you can pick. I'm just going to give you guys the first choice. So Batman saves Jason Todd gets away, or Jason Todd dies. And so you have those three vectors, and then from those three vectors,
that could be the first choice?
Yeah, that's it. And it's like within 5 minutes of starting the movie. So it's like it immediately starts to branch off. And
I think everybody's assumed that you've seen Under the Red Hood at this point, because it's a kind of like a sequel to that. And
so
it just gets right to the meat. It gets right to the meat.
First choice, is it over?
Well, no, because Red Hood.
Yeah, it gives, really good. It gives you a really truncated version of that story narrated. And I know Mark doesn't want to spoil too much in case anybody's going to see
it. No, we don't want to spoil anything. Like, but
I still want to see this. Yeah. So let's not over talk it any further.
So that is who we got to talk to at New York Comic Con, is the cast of Death in the Family. We talked to Brendan Vietti.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to Bruce Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We talked to
Vincent Martella.
Martella.
I do remember that.
And we also talked to the lovely Zahra Fazal, who plays Talia al Ghul.
Ah.
Yep. And the writer... creator. Did you guys mention his name yet?
Brendan Vietti.
Okay,
yeah.
I
mentioned him first.
Okay.
The writer creator. He's the one that took the ball.
None of those other people would have jobs.
And ran
Brendan.
It into the
Good
end
work.
Zone. He mapped it all out, came up with all these stories and versions, and it's pretty amazing. So that's who we're about to listen to.
God, it just it seems like such an undertaking. It's hard not to think about it when you do it. You know what? I'm just going to ask him. Magic interview machine, bring us over there. Let me try and grill this Zoom press conference from New York Comic Con. Welcome, listeners, to the world of 2020 Comic-Con roundtables. They're just Zoom meetings. But as your intrepid host, Grim Shay, here, I will not let the fact that all these are pre-recorded responses to other people's questions stop me from asking the tough questions. As always, listeners, you can count on me. So let's get right to it. First question, director Brendan Vietti. How do you even plan a choose-your-own-adventure movie? Come on, man. Is it easy or what? Go!
It's extremely difficult to plan out. In addition to the branching, it wasn't just straight ahead riding. It was also connecting to Under the Red Hood. We told such a great story there from Judd Winnick, who wrote the original story for the comics, who wrote the script for the movie that I directed. And it was a great sort of launch pad story for a lot of the new material in Batman Death and the Family. So I tried to kind of use some of that material because it's familiar. A lot of fans have already seen it. That's a beloved story in DC history now. The movie did well, and I know a lot of people have seen it. So I wanted to just jump off of those things that you might remember and then take you in entirely new directions based on some of that knowledge. There's a lot of stuff planned into this story that is definitely more rewarding if you're deeply familiar with the Batman universe and specifically Batman Under the Red Hood. So having to track all of that material, all of the knowledge I've learned as a fan and as a maker of Batman stories over the years, trying to employ all of that knowledge, put it into these branching stories so that there's a lot of Easter eggs along the way, a lot of history that is touched on. Was pretty difficult. So I was writing and editing simultaneously. I didn't quite have the freedom to just go straight ahead and write. I was literally editing the movie as I was writing it. So that was very challenging, but I do hope to make more of these. I really, really want people to pick up this Blu-ray. I really tried to make this a really entertaining new experience for people. And I really hope that this will launch a lot of new movies where we can expand and go further. There's a limited number of choices here, but if this proves to be a really popular story for a lot of people, we'll get to do more. So I really hope people will pick up that Blu-ray, enjoy making those choices, let Warner Brothers know you want more so that I can keep making these. We can all get together and make more of these.
Yeah, of course. We all want more. We all want fun, rah, rah, rah. But how exactly, sir, do you balance the story needs with player choice? Answer me that and do it quickly.
That's a great question.
Then give me a great answer.
You know, with the choices, I really tried to develop choices that put Jason Todd specifically at a real crossroads in his life. I think that still provides a lot of freedom to the audience. It's hard. I think just giving the choice is the freedom. So I don't think I was focusing too much on the audience so much as I was the character. I wanted these choices to be rooted in, strong directions for the character, strong life-changing events happening where the decisions are not yes or no. They're much deeper. These are life-altering decisions that you'll have to make along the way, and you'll have to think about them. So to me, that was really the hard part of the writing, was coming up with these decisions that are very deep, then coming up with repercussions from these choices that are unexpected, because that was, I think, my number one thing through going into this branch narrative, interactive experience, was that I didn't want to just present go left or go right. It had to be much deeper than that. You had to really think about making the choice and then see that your choices don't always lead to where you think they're going to go. So making the outcomes unexpected and making the choices deep, I think is such an important part of the storytelling process to, you know, really help you connect deeper with the characters. The story had to surpass the gimmick, so to speak. So again, that was my attempt to, again, draw people into this interactive experience. I really hope, you know, people enjoy these decisions and these outcomes.
Sounds a little to me like you're just a lazy writer making us, the audience, do the work for you. But I'm going to give you extra points for coming up with branch narrative interactive experience out of your ass. All right, switching gears, let's go to the voice cast. You, Bruce Greenwood, you had to do a new version of Batman? What the hell? How many times can you do it? What was that like? Go, go.
Well, I was woefully ignorant of the superior Batmans that had come before. And in a way, it was lucky because I didn't realize how much I had to live up to. So I was just preparing for the character as I saw him. And it wasn't until later that I realized how many sort of seminal performances had been iterated by other voice actors. And so there are no comparisons in my mind because I just had the good sense not to go there, because I think it would have really, I would have struggled a little bit, frankly, trying to evoke certain aspects of other people's performances that are maybe not organic to who I am, you know. So and originally talking with Tim and dialing in timbre and tone and that kind of thing, I was being guided by them as well. So it wasn't as though I came in with something that was immovable at all. I came in with you know, some pretty mushy clay, and they went, not that shape. No, different shape. Try this, and, you know, get here, get there, get wherever you need to drift into. They helped me find that. So that was a really collaborative process.
Well, that sure sounds like code for I got everyone else to do my job for me, to me, sir. So in that spirit, I'm going to move down the line. Next up, I got a question for you, Vincent Martella. You played Robin, you played Jason Todd, but you had to play every version according to players' choices as you were recording. What was that like? Was that a dream come true, a pain in the ass, somewhere in between? I'm tired of waiting for answers. You better start talking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was definitely a large part of the process when recording the film. And Brandon was really helpful with that. So was Wes Gleason, who was helping me while I was in the booth and voice directing me. And Brandon did a really fine job, as he was, you know, discussing in a question earlier, of this map that he's created to lay out what all these choices mean for all the characters. And, you know, when I got into record, he showed me that with, you know, all these different branches and what all these decisions will mean for the character, and showed me a lot of the art that he had already had for, you know, how the character aesthetically will change. And then it was a matter of making sure that, every one of those choices and how that shapes Jason Todd going forward is reflected in the performance, and staying true to that, you know, that specific version of him throughout that entire storyline, not, you know, falling back into sounding, no, that sounds too much like, you know, this specific storyline we were exploring earlier in the day when we were recording, and not falling into those things. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I was doing it perfectly the whole time. I certainly wasn't. It was definitely a team effort to make sure and keep me on track. That in a way is really exciting and really cool, because it's super rare to get the chance to play a character in this many different ways. And even just when Brandon showed me all the art of all the different types of Jason Todd I was going to get to play, I got so excited. I was so, so excited. Just because I knew so little about how this was all going to look in the interactive element and what that meant. So just my own excited way, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Meh, wrong. However, honestly, Vince, your energy, it's infectious. I've really taken a shine to you. You can stick around. Next on the hot seat, Zara Faisal. listen, you're going to play Talia al Ghul, and you're going to tell me exactly what stands out about it to you. It's that simple. Don't do it wrong. Don't screw it up and start talking.
Well, as I mentioned in the panel...
Forget the panel. Live in the now.
I think Talia and Bruce Wayne are very, very similar people, and that's probably why they get along the way they do. I think that she is very much a team builder, and she is, you know, as a member of the League of Assassins, with the weight of her father's legacy, of Ra's al Ghul's legacy, what I always think about when I think of Talia is what does it mean to when you are the successor of something that grand, what do you do to make your own mark on it? How are you different? Do you feel like you have something to prove? So these things are kind of in the back of my head when I think about Talia, and certainly when I approached her in this, in Batman Death in the Family. I think, you know, she's obviously very powerful and very intelligent, but I think there's this desire to create whatever the next thing is going to be, to go a step further than her father. And so that to me comes to mind when I think about her. It's like building her own legacy and building her own team.
A surprisingly acceptable answer and hopefully spoiler-free. All right, you can step aside for now, Zara, but Brandon, you're back on the hot seat. This one's for you, and it comes straight from my partner, James Lazinski, Jimmy the Gent. And he wants to know, hey, references to other Batman stuff. Are there some in there? You know you're writing this for fans. What can we expect? Give us an entire list of all your references, starting right now.
It's basically Easter eggs. Like, what are the other Easter eggs in there? Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of references to different, not only books, but, I mean, movies, too. There are, you know, I think some, you know, Tim Burton-type references in there, Nolan references, Christopher Nolan. I mean, it cuts deep. I don't want to give all the Easter eggs away. Honestly, I kind of want people to dig in, and I'm actually looking forward to getting onto like forums and websites and stuff, down the road to kind of see like, you know, what are people picking up? You know, I tried to just pack it with references from comics and film, so that people would be able to watch maybe multiple times and go back and find different things each time. So again, sourcing the history of Batman was a big part of constructing this. And I hope, you know, fans will enjoy going through and finding everything, because there's a lot.
Hey, look at that. You dodged another question. Well, before I let you go, let's really talk Batman. And to prove you got the chops to do a Batman movie, answer me this question. Brandon, why so serious?
Psychology is deeply rooted in Batman's world and Batman's characters. His villains in particular are very grounded. They're not always about big superpowers. There's a lot of criminal psychology involved. A lot of villains born of tragedies that have led them down dark paths. Batman himself is born of tragedy. And, you know, I think he's so appealing as a character because of his strength to overcome that history of tragedy. And, you know, coping with those tragedies, I think, it's hard to ignore that anymore. I grew up with superhero shows that and books that, you know, can cartoonify that criminal psychology. You know, I think there's also sometimes on the hero side, a tendency to sometimes have heroes be able to brush off tragedy and get past it and just get back in the saddle and keep riding. You know, it's sort of an old hero kind of concept. And I think things are deeper now. And I think everybody knows that. I think these themes, you know, to the point of the question, are just laid bare and out there every day in news headlines and in the world around us and our friends and our family. These sorts of psychological issues are more well known, appreciated now, and you you can't cartoonify this stuff anymore. There's the responsibility in portraying it. And so, you know, I think with this story, with Death in the Family, I leaned into the horror of it because I wanted to have people feel the consequences of these, you know, dark choices, dark paths that people face. I enjoy horror. There's definitely entertainment in horror. For some people, not everybody, but look, I tried to also use it not just as, you know, an excuse to put blood on screen. I didn't want to pull punches. So that when you feel a character going down a dark path and you see the outcome of that, it's more visceral. You feel it more. So I was trying to use horror in a way to kind of deepen the impact of the consequences of the character's outcomes and your choices along the way. So, and then also there are themes in here of mental health, of healing, to contrast with what's going on. I tried to make sure that counterbalance was there. There are demonstrations of, stories and themes that demonstrate, I think, good mental health practices. And then there are stories that demonstrate not so good mental health practices. So all of that is, you know, it's the root, it's the anchor of a lot of, you know, big fantastic superhero action. I really tried to play that contrast well so that it doesn't get too topical and overly overwrought with feeling stuff, you know, so it goes both ways. I wanted to make sure I didn't ignore that. I didn't want to cartoonify any psychological issues. I wanted to try to handle it as best that I could in the presentation here. I hope that answers the question.
Well, it was a joke question, and you gave me a 4-minute-long, deadly serious answer. Please learn to follow directions, Brandon. All right, everybody, I've only got one question left, and luckily, it's for Tony the Tiger. Tony, how are those flakes?
They're great!
That's splendid. All right, that's enough. Round table officially over. Coming off a long bender there.
Yeah, that was Amigo, Batman, Batmobile, and Bicycle. That was a commercial from the 1970s.
Yeah, I had all that stuff. Jimmy said to the shock of no one.
So, yeah, that was an interesting bit of roundtabling.
Yeah, it was, we grilled them, and they came through on the other side. Gave us a little mm-hmm. glimpse into what we can expect from Death in the Family, a branch narrative, choose-your-own-adventure. Choose-your-own-adventure, let's talk about that. That's big. When we were growing up, they were books that's easy to read. It's a juvenile kind of gimmick. And they were always generic. I think there was a couple of James Bond ones, if I remember. Correct me if I'm wrong.
There was this book series that I read as a kid. So this would have been about in the 70s, called Encyclopedia Brown.
And some of them remember those.
Yeah, and some of those were Choose Your Own Adventures, where you would go.
Remember that.
Yeah.
The Tom Hanks character, Josh Baskin, in the movie Big, you guys remember? He gets the job at a toy company.
Yeah.
you know? And his big idea at the end of the movie was a comic book where you flip the pages and it allowed you to choose the ending of the character. So
deep cut.
So yeah, this was a concept that was that they've always been trying to work on.
Yeah, it's an old idea for when you could just sort of say, and it was always like a lot of them I remember were in like the what's it called, the first person perspective, where it's like
right.
you and your friends accidentally stumbled into your uncle's laboratory and got shrunk, and now you're in a living in a village of ants or something. Like
right.
it was,
and then
it
what
just
do you
some
do? Yeah.
crazy off the wall thing that did. So when you start doing with something that has this much freedom of choice and you apply it to a big franchise like Batman, and Mark E, I remember before we were recording, you were talking about how it lets you choose canon. Explain that to me.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a big Star Wars guy, and, you know, most of us are really, really big on the concept of canon, which is a agreed upon narrative and source. So, you know, if it happens in the movies, that's the first rule of canon. So if it happens in the movies in Star Wars, that's what really happens in the Star Wars story.
And that's why then, everyone knows Han shot first. He's a murderous
Han
killer.
Han shot first, right.
Han shot canon. First. I mean, folks, I mean, let's not argue about anything. Han shot first. Go out and vote. There's a very few things that everybody
agrees. I remember
right
1977.
Now.
I saw it. It was in the movie. He shot first.
Yeah,
all right.
And that's
so
fine.
That's
now,
an example of canon.
Yes. Now, what you guys just expressed was something called headcanon, which is where you kind of make little adjustments in your head to kind of square things that aren't quite square. But that, again, I don't want to get too into that. However,
well, you brought it up.
Yeah, I don't blame you not wanting to get too much into that.
The fun thing about this is that this particular type of format allows you to actually manipulate what the canon will be. You know, because these are official DC licensed stories and creators and artists, and they're all contributing to this.
Yeah,
and
but if there's 7 to 10
to
endings, surely some of them have to contradict each other.
But let's go back to the concept of a headcanon.
Right.
You get to tell it where it's going and create the story that is true to you. And maybe they all exist at once, or maybe you have a favorite. It's really up to you as a participant in where the story gets to go. And so that's where the whole interactive thing comes in, and that's what makes this particular experience so different. And the other thing about this, which is so goddamn cool, yay physical media! Yay physical media! Because you have to have the Blu-ray to get the interactive experience.
Oh, wait a minute, but what was all this digital download I was hearing about?
Yes, you can still
Hold
do the
on.
Digital download, but you cannot do the same interactive experience that you can with the Blu-ray.
So the digital download is just a standard, what, like 90-minute animated Batman movie?
The digital download has the titles of each, like you can watch each storyline out to its finality.
Yes, but it's not like this crossroads that you reach. It's not like this interactive.
Oh, it's not where you actually get to choose. So it's basically,
it's just chapters.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't like that at all. Why would they even do that? Well, then, yay, physical media.
Physical media.
Because they're limited to, on the digital side, they're limited to what they could provide as far as being interactive, right?
Right.
No.
Right. So,
no. If there's anything my good friend George Lucas has told me is that if you do it digitally, can do anything. You absolutely, I've done it on Netflix without physical
Shoot
media.
It on digital.
I know it's possible. So I'm not quite sure what their issue is, if they just don't trust everyone to have a good player. But
you
I'm sure technology can
players,
catch
yeah.
up with that. I know it can be done without physical media.
Well, but today, right now, yay physical media. This is a reason to go
This
own
is a death
something.
Rattle,
yes.
but it's loud.
Yes.
Good for you. Blu-ray.
Well, and me, I actually played it, and a lot of people.
Oh, I like
that you
played it. I like that.
Right.
That's how I feel about them.
A lot of people that are listening to this, you may not even have a Blu-ray player, but you do have a PlayStation. You do have an Xbox, right? So I literally
making further assumptions, but please don't take it personally, listeners.
Yeah,
marketing. Yeah. We don't need to buzz market PlayStation.
Yeah. I was actually using my controller on my PlayStation to play with this particular thing, and it was great. It is fun. It's a little bit closer to a video game feel than it is to a movie feel, because it's just there's not that kind of cloud of a cannon hanging over you. You get to play with this, and it's kind of a lot of fun.
Well, but so, it seems to me at best, though, it's like when you watch it / play it, you're just creating an unstable wormhole to another dimension where this is what happens. But eventually, the curators of the actual DC animated universe are going to have to pick which one of those realities is canon, right?
Yeah. Well, and then also, I'm sure, as they kind of alluded to in the roundtable, is that this is a whole bunch of different stories that are floating around about Batman and Robin and Red Hood that they get to kind of all bring together. There's all these, different multiverses, right? And they get to kind of play with them all and put them all in one movie so they can all kind of exist at the same time, and you get to kind of follow them all through.
I can hear you straining not to spoil it for me, so I'm not going to keep pushing.
And it sounds like
they kind of addressed this. So
yeah, this,
you got me
this
more on the hook.
I really wouldn't say this is multiverses thing, Mark, if I may. This is really like kind of what if, like, and you can choose. Some storylines are straight through to the end, like one is, and then the other ones are non-spoilery discussion. But you can make decisions along the way. Like, does Robin die here? And like the first three choices are Robin lives, Robin dies, Batman saves him. And then from there, you make a couple more choices. And you get 5 to 7 minutes of video and new story, which Brandon Vietti presents really great options and great new storylines and versions or iterations of Robin, Red Hood.
Yeah.
And I probably shouldn't say, those ones are in there, so I'll stop there. and the other thing I would want to say is, and none of these endings are what you expect, and none of the decisions you make are what they seem at first blush. Like,
it's like, yeah. God damn it, I just made it worse.
It's a, right.
That's one of those good old tropes from Choose Your Own Adventures where if the first choice is save the princess and escape, it turns out the bridge collapses and you fall all the way to the bottom and die. Right,
don't eat all the ice cream. Well, the king's mad you didn't eat his ice cream, so he chopped your head. It's that kind of stuff. And it's so fun. Like, I watched it with my son, and he loved it. He was engaged. And it's, as I've mentioned before in this forum, it's hard for us to – not hard, but more and more challenging to find things that we both engage in on the same level. He was totally into, let's go back to here and find out what happens if we choose. If, again, I don't want to say too much, but what if Robin does this? Or what if, I don't want to say too much.
It increases replayability like crazy. But answer me this, because I have the novelty of it is what, at least the video stuff. And I guess to a degree, any book that you read, you're always in the back of your mind like, well, I can always just go back and choose different later. So is it more the novelty, or do you think the narrative works for it? And tell me honestly, no one else is listening, guys. Do you think it overcomes the novelty bug and still is a worthwhile story?
Can I go first on this one?
Please do.
Mind? Okay, all right. So this particular
thing, Jimmy, why don't you go first?
Okay.
Okay, I was going
to
say,
no,
Mark,
I've changed my mind. Marky, I want you to wait.
All
now
right,
go.
Here we go. All right, here we go. So this particular thing, this particular story, the fact that they made this big campaign in the 80s where we got to choose the fate, it's so fitting that this is the first story that we get to choose the fate again. So I believe, to answer your question, that this was the perfect story to start on. And as we heard in some of the audio before, if it's successful, they're going to keep doing it because the excitement works. Because you have all the 80 years of Robin, for example.
It is uncanny. You have all of these. How perfect this choice is, yeah.
There's a whole bunch of stories that you can break off and you can have fun, you know?
You can kill Robin after Robin after Robin.
Yeah. Well, and then, yeah, there can be a Jason Todd story.
It's easier to be a Robin than it is to be Batman.
The pressure's off. They know you're going to die. Your existential
ellipsis
is already closed.
He is wearing a red shirt. That's a whole nother thing.
Every now and then, when it's convenient, Jimmy knows Star Trek lore.
But, you know, and again, just to kind of keep it like on the character of Robin, you could have stories of Carrie Kelly, and you could have stories of Stephanie Brown or Damian Wayne or Tim Drake, and all of them. It doesn't matter, right? There can be all these different variations and all this fun that you can have within the DC universe. And we get this interactive kind of presentation where we can control the canon. This is how the story's going to go. And that's kind of cool to put that into the fans' hand. I really like that. So I don't think that we've seen the end of this. It's maybe just finally we got the budget, the technology, and the fan base so that we can really support this type of storytelling.
Could be. It sounds. I know you're not asking, but it sounds close enough to like you asking what I think. So I'm going to tell you now, I think it's always going to be a nice little niche thing. I don't think it's never going to be more popular than it always has been, basically, from being young adult, very young adult children's books, essentially, with this as a gimmick. And every now and then you find just the right kind of story idea to do it. But, you know, it's like the idea has been around for... Do you guys remember the old Infocom computer games, the text adventure mm-hmm. ones?
Yep.
That's exactly what this is, but with a little less feeling around. So that has kind of always been there, and they've applied it to video games pretty well. You know, if you just look at Bethesda and RPGs that go 100 hours, but I don't think it ever really takes off in video.
I'm sorry, Dan. I tried
to
talk over you a couple times. But we also – that's all I wanted to say. In the 90s, we played those video games that – video cassette games, like videotaped games that were kind of – you'd roll the dice and you'd have to fast forward or choose – and they were kind of a choose-your-own-adventure type of thing too. So the technology has kind of advanced a little bit. Remember in Community where they played that game?
Yeah, the old VHS game.
Those
which,
were real.
Where the big joke was that it seemed like it was going to catch on and absolutely didn't.
Yeah.
Infocom had a better time.
Well, and I could say now that if they're going to do this again, they're going to do this with the death of Superman. Because it's doomsday. Does he kill him? Does he not? Then you have all these other Supermen coming in. They all try to replace Superman. And, you know, blah, 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 right? There's all these alternate story arcs that could come in.
DC especially is full of, like, crazy high stakes. If you were in Batman's shoes making this decision, what would you do? And I know in the actual established canon, there's lots of those especially in DC. So I think you're right. It is ripe for it, but I don't think it's not like the coming wave. I enjoy them, but I'm glad it's not like every year they put out a new Bandersnatch. It's a bit much.
You know, we are currently spending a lot of time at home, as a broad stroke.
Yep.
And people are looking for new things and new ways to enjoy media. And that being said, companies like Netflix are looking for new ways to get you to enjoy their media. And they had a pretty fairly reasonably good sized hit with Bandersnatch. And then they did the Kimmy Schmidt one, which was also a pretty good sized thing. And
I don't think you can actually say that because Netflix doesn't release their numbers.
I'm judging by my numbers and that I watched them both.
Yeah, I watched them both too. So it was 100%
more than
at my house.
But what I was kind of leading to is they don't really even care if you like the story. They look at number of times you watched it. And if, like I did with Bandersnatch and Kimmy Schmidt, spent a good part of my day going through they're looking for. They're looking
all the
for
selling
eyes
points
on the
of clickbait with an established intellectual property that they had.
I foresee this being done well as a new and at least interesting / exciting way to tell a story.
And I agree with you 4 years ago, and now I feel like, all right, I've done a few of them. Let's make sure we only reserve those for stuff that has lots of other canon.
Yeah.
And stuff that, like, I really enjoyed the Kimmy Schmidt one, but if I hadn't watched the show, there's no way I would have gone to the trouble of it.
Yeah, that's fair.
And now I've rewatched the show a lot. I don't redo after my first three or four run-throughs. I'm kind of done. And again, I think it's sort of because I noticed the gimmick behind it. And then once the gimmick wears off, I'm like, oh, now I actually have to put in a lot of work to earn the content, which used to be spoon-fed
to me.
I think that's why I'm a negative asshole.
That's not why you're a negative asshole.
Well, yeah, there were many reasons.
Getting shot outside the opera.
There is something really kind of cool about doing this type of thing when there's a death of a major comic book character.
Yes, I think they picked exactly the right story for this.
Because we all know you're not really going to kill off a superhero.
But it there's does say be, death in the family right at the top.
I know.
So it's like,
And so why not, if you're going to do this type of format, there's alternate endings to that death. He's not really dead. He comes back in a different form. He comes back as a different hero. He comes back, like you can play along, or he does stay dead. And what does that do to everybody around that are the survivors?
No.
So this particular format fits well with the death of a comic book superhero.
Yeah.
Because we know he's not really dead. So how is he not really dead? Well, here are the different versions of why he's not dead. Pick yours.
So Dan was saying.
We put the whole whiteboard into this episode.
And Brandon Vietti just told us a little while ago, the story had to surpass the gimmick, right? So in this case, like you said, Kimmy Schmidt got old after a little while. I think what happens to Jason Todd, for me, as a huge Batman fan, I want to see every option. I want to see.
Right.
I do go back, and I've watched it twice with my son. We've watched it all the way through all the options twice. And now I'm watching it by myself, looking for all the Easter eggs and all the references and all the spoiler alert Dark Knight Returns references. And it's just it's great writing. Brandon Vietti, great writing.
Yep, I agree.
Great voice acting, but the writing on this is
a lot of Easter eggs.
As much as, again, as a lifelong Batman fan, as much as Under the Red Hood, originally the Judd Winnick saga, as much as that blew me away and grabbed me and made that part of my canon as a Batman fan, this movie does the same and adds to it in such a way that we're going to see, I guarantee you, we're going to have to see these different versions of the character that we've seen in this movie, we're going to see more of them. We're going to see.
So you think they've splintered reality?
If it's
irreparable now.
Well, the multiverse is a big seller right now, and whether it's a miniseries to test the waters on this version, again, we don't want to say too much. This version, that
Someone's
version.
Someone's got to rein in continuity in canon now.
Five out of these new endings, you will see more of these characters. I guarantee it.
Yeah,
I'd bet my cowl on it.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. But that also means that anyone who wants to keep up with all of it has to watch this experience at least five times. And I do notice that Jimmy refers to it as, I'm sorry, that was mean. But I notice that, Jimmy, you refer to it repeatedly as a movie or different storylines, and you say watch, whereas Marquee did, I'll remind you, jump right to first time I played it.
Right.
So I think it seems like I'm shitting on it, but it's things like this I consider more like a video game. Mm-hmm. Sure, a slow video game that's just a cutscene video game. But I feel like once I have explored everything in a video game world, I can put it aside. It lives in a little part of my brain. The more games afterwards I play, the further it gets away. But still, whereas I consider movies a different thing, that is something I can go revisit because I just sit there and they pour it on my face or whatever the...
Did you see the Blair Witch Project in the theater?
I did.
Yeah. I did. And did you really enjoy it?
Mostly, I really enjoyed it until the end. Yeah, I didn't. I thought the end was kind of the internet was new, and you know, a lot of people, myself included, kind of bought into the hype. Like up until a couple days before I saw it, and somebody spoiled it for me that it wasn't real. So I went in half in and half out. And then I thought it was pretty creepy and was all in until the ending was, spoiler alert, a dude jerking off in the corner, which I'm like,
I don't think that's what he was doing.
Yeah, something else was going to happen after he was jerking off there, and then it just went to black.
What I gave you as a viewer, my time and
that
my
scared
emotion,
the hell out of me.
I needed a bigger payoff.
Scary, and I was like, holy shit! Then what's going to happen next?
Well, you guys didn't really give me the answer I was looking for, so let me.
Let me
check the group chat real quick.
This was.
Oh yes, Mark.
I did enjoy the fact that it was kind of like an event. That it was.
That's
a whole
what I was looking
big
for.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's an event.
When I went there, it was
everybody
a bit
was
more than
about.
A movie.
Everybody was talking about it. There was a line around the block, which is rare these days.
Yes. Now ask me if I've ever watched it again.
Right. Have you ever watched it again?
No.
Exactly.
I saw part two at least twice.
Oh, more.
Part one, I was like, well, that was an experience more than a movie.
Why would you say that,
and I've got it all.
This conversation's getting away from me, but I do want to say this, is that this movie, A Death in the Family, it is an experience, and you have to be involved with it. You have to interact with it. So it's not your typical, you know, this is not going to win any Oscars because it doesn't qualify, you know, it's different than that.
Well, it sounds
more
like
a game.
At least one version on some digital download could.
Well, you know, I kind of give away my annual Oscar Mayer Award, where I just kind of watch movies and eat bologna sandwiches. And it's one of the nominees, so don't speak too soon.
Does your award
you get a lot of bang for your buck, right?
Well, yeah.
Hey, you still win an Oscar.
I mean, I've got 45 minutes to get through this whole pack of bologna and and see all the options of what happens to Jason Todd. And I just
my Academy Award has a second name.
You know it.
So yeah, guys, I think there is room for this type of film, and when you got the creative talent
for fans
that is
listening.
Available, I think that we could.
All right. Well, you actually.
It's got my thumbs up.
I want it to be known that you guys have sold me. I was just grilling you further because I felt like the podcast should be a little bit longer. But you have sold me. I do want to watch it. I don't know if you're going to hold a contest to get this because apparently I need the actual physical media. I would ask that you give me a head start in whatever contest you might be running.
Yeah, pay attention to our Twitter feeds. We'll be giving some away.
Okay,
we're
that's the opposite
the
of a head start.
Copy. Yeah,
I'm
going to give away
Twitter.
My copy. The fine folks at WB Home Entertainment sent me a copy. I enjoyed it, and I want to pay it forward. Let somebody else enjoy the love. I'm going to go out and buy it, but you guys could have my free copy, and maybe you guys can pay it forward and give somebody the digital code. But like Marquee said, pay attention to our Twitter feeds. At Stay Classy San Diego, at SD
no,
Batman
that can't be right.
66.
It's at Stay Classy SDCC. And yours?
At SD Batman 66.
Uh-huh, there you go. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll be giving, he'll be giving his away. I'll be keeping mine, like if I'm a hobbit. I'm just going to
retweet, follow.
Like if I'm a troll.
Make sure you follow at SD Batman 66. One of the few in the proud.
But yeah, I think it's a really good movie. And I think, again, yay for physical media. You really should buy it and you should own it because it is a good movie. And I could see this being a really good movie. Like, you know, have some director pick the story arc. Have him lay it out for you. Watch it.
Okay, wait. So no it's problem. Definitely not a movie in its current form.
It
oh,
can
this
be.
Thing is
That's
so
fine.
Amorphous. I almost love
I know.
It.
No, I like
it. It is. It's really.
I
weird.
Agree with
really
what weird. You're saying, Dan. It is a bit like a video game. And with, if I can use the example of Bandersnatch, when that first came out on Netflix, Black Mirror's Bandersnatch. I thought, you know, the first run through, great. Second run through, great. And then, you know, I'm just the kind of guy like I want to see everything.
Yep.
So I spent, like I mentioned earlier, a good part of my day going through everything or whatever it was, a couple days, saw everything, saw the avenues, went online, made sure I had seen everything, told everybody how much I loved it, still talk about how much I loved it, but I haven't watched it since. And feel no need to because I've exhausted all that.
I felt the same way about Quantum Leap.
That is actually what you were describing is exactly how everybody plays a Hideo Kojima game. And if you want to understand that reference, you're going to have to tune in for our video game episode. But in the meantime, I feel like we've killed enough Robins here today. That's about enough of this.
That's what they say at the end.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
This is enough of this.